Coming up on Tech News Today, Apple gets some respect in China. Amazon hires an old Windows phone hand. Are they making a phone? Well, I don't know about that, but they're definitely taking on Dropbox and cloud storage. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, April 2nd, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPad, Samsung Galaxy, and other smartphones are worth at gazelle.com. And by RingCentral. We do everything in the cloud. That's why we love our cloud-based phone system by RingCentral. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral is $20 a month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. Buy one desk phone. Get a second phone free up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit RingCentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, or online store. Check out their new commerce solution so you can start selling stuff immediately. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT4. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zaktar.
I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show. We keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, starting each time with the top 10 of the day, the news views. Well, China got Apple to bow. The People's Republic has been hammering Apple in the press and elsewhere over its warranty policies. And yesterday, Apple CEO Tim Cook apologized for miscommunication and promised a new repair policy for iPhone 4 and 4S, as well as new explanation pages. The state-run Global Times wrote that Apple's apology letter has eased the situation and was worth respect.
Although Steve Jobs passed away in 2011, he had finalized designs for future iPhones to include the next two versions. That's according to San Francisco District Attorney George Gascón. Gascón says he learned this from Michael Foulkes, which is Apple's head of government liaison. The two apparently met to discuss ways of reducing the rate of theft in San Francisco, such as introducing a kill switch technology to upcoming devices. Gascón described Apple's response as underwhelming and said that they told him the next two iPhone designs preceded Tim Cook to mean they'd been designed years earlier.
Prepare yourself for a double dose of Google privacy news. First up, Google is looking at potential fines from all over the EU. The French Data Protection Authority, CNIL, says Google hasn't responded to its requests to revise its new privacy policy that debuted last year. CNIL is giving the case to EU member states to deal with the issue, meaning Google could face fines in a number of countries. Next up, Google's director of privacy, Alma Witten, is stepping down. She's been on the job since 2010 and will stay with Google to help with the transition to the new director, Lawrence Yu.
Have you beret-wearing Europeans wondered why all us cowboy Americans are always whining about AT&T? Well, guess what? You may get the chance to find out firsthand. The Financial Times reports Verizon and AT&T are teaming up on a bid to buy the world's second largest carrier, Vodafone. Under the deal, Verizon would buy out Vodafone's 45% stake in Verizon's U.S. operation, and then AT&T would snap up the rest, meaning AT&T would become second only to China Mobile in world mobile carrier domination.
Remember Anso Labs? That was the cloud computing startup that originated at NASA and then was acquired by Rackspace a little over 2 years ago. Some members of the team have a new project called Nebula, which builds a turnkey computer that turns a rack of servers into a cloud-ready system running OpenStack. Plug the servers into what's called the Nebula One. You turn it on and it boots up cloud. Runs on an operating system called Cosmos that grabs all the memory and storage and CPU capacity from every server in the rack, makes them part of the cloud. And they got two very big customers already, Genentech and Xerox's research lab, Park, already on board.
AT&T's 4G LTE needs more letters. Let's add HD. AT&T is getting HD voice technology later this year and will implement HD voice using its LTE network. To hear the improved audio, you will need HD voice compatible hardware along with that HD voice carrying network.
HBO must feel very complimented today. The season premiere of Game of Thrones not only broke rating records, but also BitTorrent records. Within a few hours of the premiere, open BitTorrent tracker showed 163,088 people sharing a single torrent of the show. That breaks the record of 144,663 set by the season premiere of Heroes, of all things. Torrent Freak estimates the show was downloaded more than a million times after the first day it was aired.
Amazon's updated its Cloud Drive desktop app for Windows and Mac with a Dropbox-style file synchronization feature. It'll make it easier to manage files across multiple computers, of course, and they're calling it File Sync. You can access your documents, your photos, your music, all files in the Amazon Cloud from a dedicated folder on your computer. Files dropped in this folder are stored in Cloud Drive and can be accessed from computer on the web. Install the Cloud Drive app on a second computer, and all of those sync files will be synced.
Like syncing, if it works. Yeah. Network World reports the IEEE has launched a study group to explore development of, get ready to have a little mouthwatering, 400 gigabit per second Ethernet standard. IEEE says networks can expect 58% compound annual growth rates in bandwidth on average and would need to support 1 terabit per second capacity in 2015 and 10 terabit per second by 2020. 100 gigabit per second Ethernet is just now coming to market after the standard was ratified in 2010, and work on that 100G standard began in 2006. So IEEE may need to move faster to faster Ethernet this time around.
I'm sure every reporter had to check the following story a bunch of times before saying it was safe. On April 1st, news hit that Amazon hired Charlie Kendall. Now, Kendall is a former general manager of Windows Phone at Microsoft and wrote a whole bunch of stuff on his LinkedIn profile. He listed his position as director of something secret. Amazon Phone, anybody?
I want that title. That's awesome. Is that his official title?
That's
anyway,
what he wrote
also
on LinkedIn.
His name's Kendall. Just saying.
Amazon's got a new Kindle was the headline on a lot of blogs.
Yeah. This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Gazelle. If you want a new Kindle or maybe a new smartphone, new iPhone, new Samsung Galaxy S4, that HTC One's going to beat it to market, actually. Any of those things, you're probably going to need to drum up a little cash for. Before you get your new phone, or if you've already upgraded, make sure you sell your used iPhone, your Samsung Galaxy phone, your Android phone to Gazelle for cash. Don't give it away or bury it in last year's gadget in a drawer. Find out what it's worth at GAZELLE.com. It's easy. That's what I love about Gazelle. You don't have to think about it. You don't have to waste a lot of time. You can go to Gazelle.com, find your item, tell them the condition. They'll even buy broken iPhones and iPads. Get a risk-free offer for your gadgets and then lock it in for 30 days. During that 30 days, you're like deciding if you really want to get rid of it, going out and getting the new phone, so and transferring all your data and all your contacts, and then you send the old phone to Gazelle, and they'll get you paid fast by check or PayPal. So go to Gazelle.com right now. Get an offer for your iPhone, your Samsung, HTC, BlackBerry smartphones, iPad, other Apple products. Do it today because your gadgets may lose value over time. Sell your gadgets the fast and simple way. Go to Gazelle.com. Find out what your iPhone, your iPad, or your Android smartphone is worth at Gazelle.com and sell your used iPhone or Samsung Galaxy smartphone today. Get a little cash in your pocket from Gazelle.com. Do it and let them know, hey, I heard about it on Tech News Today. We thank them for their support of the show. Also want to thank John Falcone of CNET for joining us today. Thank you, John. It's good to have you back on the show, man.
Agreed. Thanks for having me back.
We have some delicious tech news to serve to the people today, starting with Apple's apology and how it was received in China. Sarah?
Yeah, it was received pretty well, actually. We mentioned yesterday that Apple had offered a personal apology from Tim Cook on behalf of Apple after almost daily media criticism for about 2 weeks from the People's Daily and the Foreign Ministry. Apple was facing threats of penalties from China's State Administration for Industry and Commerce, as well as its Quality and Inspection Bureau. So Apple apologized to Chinese consumers. This, of course, stemmed from what China considered poor communication and arrogance over a warranty policy that China said, it's not even as good as policies in other countries. Apple said, okay, we're going to change our terms of service for some of the iPhones sold in China to appease the situation. And the popular tabloid, the Global Times, which is published by the People's Daily, said, yeah, we're happy with this, and that Apple's reaction is worth respect, compared with other American companies. I thought that was kind of interesting. Not only is Greater China Apple's second biggest and fastest growing market, with sales up 40% in the final quarter of 2012. So absolutely a market that Apple has to take seriously. But something where if Apple goes ahead and says, okay, we're sorry, we understand you're a big partner here, and we want to make sure that we're being proactive in situations like this instead of, angering you, then they're setting themselves apart from, at least in China's eyes, perhaps a lot of other American companies. Although they weren't the first to be targeted in this way, back in March, Volkswagen was also criticized. There was a gearbox problem in some of its cars. It plans to recall those. So, I don't know, John, do you feel like when it comes to China, if China is protesting loudly enough, they're going to get an apology because everybody's got to play nice when it comes to money?
It's interesting. I mean, clearly the Chinese market is very important to Apple and pretty much anybody else. But nothing happens in the Chinese media without the approval or blessing of the government. And that's my bigger question, I guess, is why the government felt it necessary to kind of inject itself into Apple's customer relations. I wonder if it's a little bit of tit for tat on the way the U.S. has been treating Huawei and ZTE in terms of creating rules and saying they can't sell into certain high-tech infrastructure because there's a security issue. Maybe this is the Chinese government's way of pushing back on an American company.
Tom, do you think there's any truth to that? Maybe it's sort of a here's our in to lay the hammer down on Apple, although these issues aren't really about warranties and phones.
Possibly, right? I mean, that's a really interesting point. Although, would the end game be to say, lovely apology, you deserve great respect for that? I mean, I think if that was the only thing motivating it, they'd be pushing harder against Apple. I feel like it's probably partly that's feeding it. But there's also this idea that Apple really wants to be on China Mobile. They almost have to be on China Mobile if they really want to be a success in China. And maybe this was sort of the let's make sure that Apple will toe our line by pushing them in the public eye and see what they do. And they essentially caved. I mean, they caved in an Apple way, which is to say, we're sorry you didn't understand us, not we're actually sorry for doing anything wrong.
We're sorry you were offended, China.
Yeah, exactly. It's a little bit of that, which is typically what Apple does in response. But they did respond, and they are making a few changes.
There are a lot of people who will say, wow, this is Steve Jobs never would have done this. This is not the Apple that, you know, of yesteryear. But then again, the Chinese market is also not the market of yesteryear either. Is this just inevitable?
I think what's going on here is not just what John's theory is. I don't think Steve Jobs would be apologizing publicly. If he was going to do it, I bet it would be in private. Tim Cook has been very public about saying sorry about lots of things, including maps. But the thing is, I believe it was Apple's deal with Foxconn that brought a lot more trouble to China, brought a lot of things to light, saying, hey, look, this factory over here is crazy. So the idea that China could be like, they could be upset that their working conditions are being publicized around the world on top of that. And they want to get, and Apple wants to get into China Mobile. China has a lot of leverage to make Apple do what it wants because China's an incredibly important market. And there's a saturation point in certain nations already. So if you want to cater to a growing market, you have to cater to China.
Yeah, maybe they just want to see if they can make Tim Cook dance or at least shuffle a tiny bit. All right. I mean, Charlie Kendall leaving Windows Phone, going to work for Amazon, where they make the Kindle, and he's working on a secret project. What's not to love about this story, Ayaz?
I don't know what's not to love, but I'm going to add a little bit more facts to this. So we got Charlie Kendall, used to be the Windows Phone GM, just joined Amazon. He wrote on his LinkedIn profile, quote, I'm building a new team going after a totally new area for Amazon. I'm hiring cloud and mobile developers and testers, program managers, and product managers. His latest job, as I've mentioned before, is described as director, something secret. That's his description. I don't know if that's on its own his business cards. Amazon. He also wrote, Amazon presented an opportunity to build something new that has ginormous potential. I simply couldn't pass the opportunity up. Now, in the past, he's been Microsoft's GM of Windows Phone, app platform, and developer experience. He also worked on Windows Home Server and Windows Media Center. John, what do you think is more likely? You think it's Kindle working on the cloud drive? Is he working on a phone? Neither, both, everything?
I would think it would have to be the phone. I mean, that's the one thing rumored at Amazon that we haven't seen yet, and that would, I think, make a lot of sense for them to get into. That being said, if they go there, I feel they better do it with something pretty compelling. And I almost feel for Amazon, a phone would be much more important than the hardware or even the price if they gave it away for free would be something about the service. I mean, that's we have this Facebook announcement coming on Thursday about how they're doing something with Android. Personally, I don't need another Android skin, whether it's from Facebook or Amazon, but something to really shake up the market, like, you know, free service is too much to ask for, but something that would really be a game changer in terms of how people interact with their phone, contracts, like T-Mobile tried. They definitely have the leverage to do something like that. It's going to be interesting to see.
Tom, you and I like to parse language. He says here, I'm building a new team going after a totally new area for Amazon.
Did he say totally new?
That's what it says. Totally new area for Amazon.
Huh.
What do you think that means?
Well, that would imply phone. And the sensible reading of all of this is, hey, this guy works with Windows Phone. He's going to bring in some of that app platform experience, and he's going to help Amazon make a platform for phones. And Amazon's going to revolutionize the way we buy phones. They're going to make their stab at platform independence like Google did a long time ago. That all is reasonable, and that's probably what's going on. But what I wish it would be, because I want more competitors in this particular space, is a set-top box. I mean, don't forget he also worked on Windows Media Center and Windows Home Server. Maybe Amazon comes with some kind of home media management server on steroids that's like, forget your Rokus and your Apple TVs. Those are toys. We are going to deliver you all of this amazing content that we have to every screen in your home wirelessly in 4K. Maybe not 4K, but you know what I mean? Like getting into that space where they're like, hey, it's the Amazon Kindle TV. I think that's probably a secondary possibility, not the most likely, but he does have that experience. They could use him for that.
Sarah, we've heard rumors of a Facebook phone coming up this week. Would an Amazon phone make a lot of sense for the company, considering they do have the tablet series, but do they need a phone and get involved with those carriers?
I hope it's not a phone. I really do. I don't think that sounds new and exciting. And what Charlie Kindle appears to be leaking out a little bit to get people talking about what he's working on. Tom, I think that your media center idea is very compelling. You know, I also think, well, he has so much experience with app platforms. Is this sort of a rebuild of the, you know, the Kindle tablet line experience? You know, is it something where they know that they've been successful there and there's some sort of a refresh going on with the UI and how it looks? That would be also a little underwhelming, but I'm kind of just trying to think, all right, well, it's easy for us to say, oh, it's probably a phone because that's a very Me Too type of a thing. But I'm just not sure that that's in Amazon's best interest. They've been successful with so many other things. Do they really need to, you know, get into the telco game as well?
You know, I was thinking about Amazon's experience with telcos. They do have tablets that have, I believe, AT&T integration. The old Kindle had, I think it ran on the Sprint network. There were a couple of deals that happened there. And they did include lifetime service. And they've changed that model a bit. If Amazon could work on a deal where they had pretty much a transparent deal where you didn't see what the carrier was. Because when you buy the Kindle Fire HD 8.9 with LTE, I think that's the name, they don't really tell you who the carrier is. I think it's somewhere buried in the details. I think a phone for Amazon and also a set-top box, especially with Charlie Kindle's cloud experience, I think theoretically because of that Whisper Sync technology that they've implemented so well with books and video, it'll make it really easy to go, why would I want to watch this on my phone? It's because it'll keep syncing up with your tablet. It'll sync up with your set-top box at some point. I think Amazon's in a really unique position that they can offer all of those things and say, look, our content's going to run everywhere, and you don't have to even worry about it.
I mean, I like the idea of a set-top box. My only question would be, A, why wouldn't they buy privately held Roku, first of all? And B, what would they deliver that they don't already have on the Roku, which is a pretty great Amazon video experience and the Amazon Cloud Player.
It would be taking the Apple approach to say, like, it's all Amazon, right? The same way they're doing a Kindle Fire, even though they have their Amazon apps available on iOS and Android, they have the Kindle experience that's all Amazon. And maybe they bring in other apps, and maybe they say, instead of Apple TV locking you down and saying, these are the apps you get, we're going to have an app platform on this. So you can have a Netflix app and a Hulu app, and anybody can make an app, and we're not going to stop them from doing so. But I still think phone just fits all of the things he's saying better. Now, on the other hand, Amazon is getting into the file syncing, so maybe that informs this discussion a little bit. Amazon Cloud Drive launched with music a long time ago, but you could put non-music things in it. The problem was you couldn't sync it, at least not very easily. Now they've added a new app for Windows XP and up, and OS 10, 10.6 and up, that adds file sync. So it shows up as a file folder on your desktop. It does require Java. If you're one of the OS 10 people who've gotten rid of Java, you'd have to reinstall it if you wanted to use this. And it's desktop only. There is an Android Photo Sync app, but that was last updated February 1st, so it doesn't work with this. But on your desktop, you get 5 gigabytes of free space to upload, or you can pay for 20 gigabytes for $10. Ends up being about $2 per gigabyte for the different plans. We got now Yahoo Mail integrating with Dropbox as well. So as Amazon starts to take on Dropbox, Dropbox is moving ahead saying, hey, we got apps. You can get stuff on apps. And we're now the Yahoo Mail partner. So if you want to open a file in Yahoo Mail or include a file as an attachment in Yahoo Mail, like Gmail can do G Drive, now we can do Dropbox in Yahoo. So everybody's moving in to the cloud competition. SkyDrive, Google Drive, Box.net, Dropbox, now Amazon. We have true competition in cloud drives here. Is that a good thing? John, what do you think?
It sounds like a good thing until you try to trade a file with somebody and realize they're using one of the 12 other services, I think. That's the big challenge here, is the lack of maybe ubiquity and universal access to these things. That being said, you know, I do like the competition here. I do think these are useful and, you know, affordably priced, if not free for a basic tier. I mean, that Java requirement really burns, though. I'm trying to stay away as far from Java as possible these days.
Yeah, and Dropbox, twice as expensive, but does give you mobile apps. SkyDrive, about the same price, gives you 7 gigabytes free. So there's advantages. There are choices to be made. Sarah, do you have a favorite out of these?
Oh, it's Dropbox by a wide margin. But that's also because I'm hooked in now, and Dropbox continues to make their product better as a customer. But I'm sort of loyal, and I think that that's one of the issues that we sort of have. You know, that John touched on, is it's almost like the next phase of, you know, word processing documents that are hard to open on one computer when they were made in a program that I don't have. And, you know, there's a little bit of like, well, it doesn't work as well as it should. You know, the whole idea of sharing files in the cloud should be a lot easier, but it depends on what platform you're using. I think that in general, having more of these services that do a lot of the same things will help keep prices competitive. So in that way, I think it's good. But it does sort of turn into something where you end up having to look at a spread of, okay, how much free storage do I get per month? And blah, blah, blah. And okay, you know, it gets a little confusing, all these cloud services.
Interesting point. The confusion is also a detriment to moving. And the nice thing about competition is we have different places to move. If we don't like one, we could take our data somewhere else.
Unlike Sarah, when it comes to cloud storage, I'm not loyal to Dropbox or anything. I sign up for anything I could find. Box.net had a promotion for 50 gigabytes, and then SkyDrive had a promotion where you get to keep the 25 gigabytes they used to give you, a whole bunch of those things. I think there's an industry out there that should be for management of cloud services, because I don't want to remember if I put it in Dropbox, SkyDrive, Box.net, or whatever service pops up. And there actually are a bunch, and not to plug my own show, but we're going to talk about that on Know How in a couple of weeks. But the thing is, it's, you want to make sure you can open these files at the end of the day. And I think Dropbox has done a really great job with its preview system. Box.net also has something very similar, where you don't have to even open it, download the document, and try to open it up. These web apps are getting more powerful so they can show you the data without you having to download it. And I think that's the thing that really makes them different is, do I have to download this? Do I have to have a program to make it work? Because if I could just see a preview, that's usually good enough for most things.
I would plug that show. I think that's going to be a good show. I'm looking forward to that. Know how it, you said in like a couple weeks you'll be doing
that? I think it's on the 11th.
Yeah.
April 11th.
Check that out. All right, take a quick break and thank one of our other sponsors for today's show, Ring Central. We're just talking about the cloud. You want to do your phone calls in the cloud? We got a cloud-based phone system called Ring Central that we use at Twit. Zero startup cost, $20 a month per user. And the no-brainer is that you put the phones on the desk. So people who need a desk phone get a desk phone, but you don't have to run all that old-fashioned PBX hardware. You don't have to put up with that expense. There's zero startup costs, no PBX hardware to install or maintain. And they have a new feature called Business SMS. So you can send text messages to customers and colleagues from your business phone number. You don't have to give them your personal number like, oh, I guess just text me here and now they have my personal number. RingCentral allows you to easily customize all of your call handling. You can get your voicemail in your email. You can get your fax messages on your smartphone. RingCentral offers all-inclusive pricing as low as $20 a month per user, and you can start right now with a 30-day risk-free trial. They have a special offer for our listeners. Check this out. When you buy one desk phone, get a second phone free, up to 20 phones. So call this number designated for our listeners, 800-543-9980. That's 800-543-9980. Again, 800-543-9980. Or you can also go to ringcentral.com, use the promo code TWIT. I know a lot of you want to do that. So ringcentral.com, promo code TWIT. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Sarah's on the China beat today.
What's
up with this Android-based Smartisan OS?
Yeah, it's like Artisan, but smarter. Smartisan OS. This is actually this is really interesting. It's Android based, as you mentioned. It's created by Liu Yong Hao, who is not only an ex-English teacher, but the founder of the blogging platform Bulog.cn, which is now Bulogger.com, chairman of the Chinese Font Studio Redesign, a consumer advocate, basically a very well-known entrepreneur in China who's very outspoken. And he had announced a year ago that Smartisan was going to shame other manufacturers. Ooh, they had a December deadline to show us something. They missed it, but they did show off the OS in a three-hour presentation just a few months later. It's a team of 24 people who are working on this. And again, three-hour presentation sort of broke down all of the features of this new OS that's supposed to reimagine what we consider a mobile OS. Like four parts: visuals, functions, humanization, and then something they kind of cutesy called two more things, obviously paying homage to you know who. In the visuals section, I thought that this was actually the most interesting. And Engadget has a really great breakdown and a lot of visuals of everything that they covered. And I couldn't possibly run down the feature list in the next few minutes. But he said other Chinese manufacturers have unhealthy obsessions with the square icon style a la iOS and that whole grid layout thing. He says icons should look official but futuristic. For example, Baidu Search has a hairy paw. Google Play has an actual triangle. It's not some sort of a triangle that's in some sort of rounded corner square. Smartisan says they're going to have their own app store eventually, by the way. No wallpaper option, no icon labels. That's by default. You could turn them on in settings. But he says, you know what? You should know what your icons are. And most people don't use that many apps. So we don't have to make this look more busier than it needs to be. You can also zoom out to an overview of several home screens if you want to move icons between them rather than sort of dragging them off a page and you know, the old way, basically. And then as far as that huge feature list I talked about, a couple of things that stood out to me as really rad. Number one, a phone automatically unlocking if its proximity sensor detects you've taken it out of your pocket. There's a reminder to rotate the phone when capturing video in the portrait position. SMS delivery delayed by 3 seconds in case of regret. Awesome. And this is the first... Basically, we're looking at what will end up being the first public beta. The Galaxy S2 was what was shown in the demos. He says that this will be available June 15th. And then they say, you know what? We're working on our own hardware as well. And at that point, we're not even going to support third-party devices because our software is too good. We want our own hardware. And I kind of, this guy is, you know, he's fun to watch. It sounds like he's just a pretty evangelical speaker in general. But does anyone else kind of get excited about the fact that someone's saying, you know what, everyone does the same thing. All the mobile OSs look the same. Is this finally we're getting out of that grid iOS look that everyone thinks is a little long in the tooth?
I don't know. I mean, when it comes to the different mobile OSs that are out there, I know it's just Android versus iOS. That's what people think. But there's so many different flavors of Android, and there's so many skins on it. I don't know if they all look the same until you get into that applications drawer in Android. I like some of the features that looks like that's coming to SmartisanOS, but that seems like those are very, very copyable. Samsung has done some crazy things with its S line, its Galaxy S line. So I would assume that some of those things, like Sarah was mentioning, the unlock when you take it out of your pocket, that seems like an interesting idea. And it just seems very, very easy to copy. I don't know if there's anything unique about this that will make it have a longevity, other than the fact the person behind it had these ideas in the first place. If he has a whole bunch more, maybe it'll keep it ahead of the curve.
John, do you see anything here that excites you? Is it just being different for the sake of being different?
It's really tough is what it is. I mean, everybody says they want more choice in operating systems, but iOS and Android really have the market kind of split down the middle, at least here in the U.S. And the question is, what are these new OSs bringing to the table? I mean, it's even if you look at Windows Phone, I mean, to me, there's an OS where they did do something different, where it's not just a grid of icons. And a lot of people who spend time with that actually find it to be a very good operating system. But getting people to go away from what they know on iOS or Android just seems to be increasingly tough.
All right. Another thing that's tough is making a big press announcement on April 1st and expecting people to take it seriously. I honestly just wasn't sure. I thought it was probably true, but Nuance yesterday did, in fact, announce voice recognition in ads. Nuance are the folks that make Dragon Naturally Speaking, and they're also the technology behind Siri. And the vice president of advertising, Mike McSherry at Nuance, said Siri created an industry. People play with it. It's witty. We want to give these same sorts of tools to ad agencies, and they've got a video up on their website which shows them playing with a magic 8-ball type ad. So you speak to the ad, and it will actually answer you. Like, you can ask it a question. Skip ahead Jason. Yeah, and let's hear a little bit of the example.
Should I buy that ring?
Like a coin toss. Heads or tails?
Heads.
Heads it is. You should definitely buy it. And while you're at it, use Alpha. Smells like money in the bank.
Now, that's a made-up product, so it's kind of a dorky tagline and stuff. But Nuance's Inc. deals with ad firms like Digitas, OMD, Leo Burnett, and they say that they want to improve the engagement with mobile ads because mobile ads are clicked on accidentally 40% of the time. Who was laughing most at this demonstration? Jason,
I suppose I was snickering. I don't know. I don't want to use something like that and actually have it like be inviting it to talk directly to me about the thing that I should buy next. I don't know. There's a weird little invisible line there that when I use an app and there's an ad that's displayed on the screen, I can easily ignore it. But when it's something that's actually talking to me and it's just different.
No, it's not autoplay. You talk to it. You have a chance to interact with it.
To interact with the ad itself. I don't know. There's something weird about it. I don't know why I find it funny. I just don't like it.
Well, maybe John, would you talk to an ad?
I don't even like using Siri. I still feel talking directly to the phone still makes me feel very self-conscious and kind of dumb. So, no, I don't want to do this.
Sorry, Sarah. I know you were about to say something. Go ahead, jump in.
I hate this idea with the heat of a thousand suns. I hate it so much. I don't want to talk to ads. I don't want ads to be there, frankly. And I know that's there's nothing I can do about that. Ads are here to stay, and every once in a while I do click on an ad, and that's annoying. But they're interacting with an ad is not what I'm looking for. I mean, I don't even like want to take a poll that is somehow ad based. I just no, I don't. It's distracting and horrible, and I want no part of it.
I as do agree.
Okay, so I'm going to say with the implementation of this, I'll slightly play devil's advocate here. Now, if the idea of nuance is behind this and you're going to have a, somewhat of a snarky response, so if you do see an ad for that, whatever that thing was, that fake product, if you could ask it something snarky and be like, is that really going to work? And it actually gives you an answer back that doesn't sound like ad copy, maybe you actually would interact with the ad a little bit more. Because that's one of the things that people really enjoyed about Siri in the first place was that you could ask it something stupid and it would try to give you an answer back. And if that kind of interaction is possible, that you want it to, you know, you want to make fun of the ad and it actually responds back in a funny way, maybe you'll interact with it. But I don't want ads talking to me either. I don't really find the need for that kind of
nonsense. I think that's what everybody immediately thinks, and I did this too, is like, I don't want this ad talking to me. But if they do it right, and I'm not saying they will, it doesn't talk to you. You have to start talking to it. And that, I think, is one of the other problems, is how do you get people to learn to talk to their ads? If you could do both those things, then maybe there's some really useful things. You could just ask questions about something that you are, in fact, interested in. It's sort of not obvious, I think, to most people why they would want to do this. But believe me, we're going to get it. It's going to be out there. It's the new Punch the Monkey of 2013. meanwhile, Apple trying to beef up Siri so that John Falcone will use it more, right, Ayaz?
Let's talk a little bit more about talking to computers. Yeah, Fast Company noticed that Apple posted 12 different positions related to Siri over the weekend. Positions include Siri web developer, operations engineers, software engineers, and interaction designer. Now, Fast Company thinks that this means that Siri is going to expand, noting that the Siri integration engineer, this person would triage and prioritize incoming feature enhancements and functionality regressions that may arise, ensuring that the tickets are appropriately categorized. As was mentioned before, Apple bought Siri in 2010, flagship feature of the iPhone 4S in 2011. John, since you don't like using Siri, let's ask you this. Is there anything Apple could do with Siri to make it more useful for you or just anybody?
Well, yeah, start by making it more useful and accurate. I mean, I say I don't like to use it. I have used it, and I have used the Google competitor. And the Google one, in my experience, just blows Siri away in terms of accuracy and usefulness. Like, I think, I seem to remember you could ask the Google one, like, who won the World Series in 1959? And it'll basically give you a pretty good answer, at least in a search result. And Siri's still not quite there yet on that type of functionality. So, you know, just make it better. Make it work. Make it useful.
Sarah, do you think opening up like a Siri API to a lot of different apps would make this thing more useful? Because right now, Siri's pretty tightly controlled.
Yeah, sure would. You know, Apple recently opened up GarageBand to an open standard for use in other apps that where you can import music into them and then import directly into GarageBand. So it's not as if there aren't other instances where we can see Apple saying, you know what, it behooves us to open things up a little bit more. For something like Siri, that would excite me a lot. I also, you know, I feel like, you know, John, you use the World Series statistic. I mean, that's cool for me. You know, that's not something I'm going to be doing multiple times per day. So I feel like the more Siri can become part of an extension of my brain, where I'm able to ask relevant things that have to do with everyday life in order to get stuff done and be a little bit smarter, is really important. And right now, we all, well, not all of us, but many of us kind of forget that Siri is even there because it's not indispensable yet. So yes, hiring more people who are going to work on that platform is the right idea if Apple wants anyone to take Siri seriously.
Seriously.
Yeah, like that was a lot of the headlines.
Get
too.
It?
Yeah.
Get it?
So, Tom, should Apple be pulling back from the whole snarky, sarcastic Siri and just go, hey, look, we want accuracy? That'd be different.
Well, they don't have to. There's not an either-or choice. They can do both. And I think that our friend at Nuance, Mr. McSherry, is right that one of the things that got people interested in Siri was seeing that it had a little personality. It wasn't just a, you know, generic computer voice. But you do want, and over time, you want it to be accurate. And over time, that's why my wife, like John Falcone, prefers the Google response because it just works better. She's always taunting me with like, oh, your Siri can't do this. And I'm like, well, I don't really use Siri either. That's the problem. So, yes, they need to beef up and they need to make it more accurate. And don't forget, Apple says Siri is in beta, so they can always plead that, you know, oh, well, Siri isn't done yet, right? I mean, did they take it out of beta with the iPhone 5? I don't remember now.
No, it's still a beta product.
Yeah, so there you go. I mean, I think that's kind of weaselly to leave something and to launch something on a phone like this in beta and leave it there for a couple of years, but they certainly aren't the first ones to do that.
I mean, the fact
Gmail had a solid decade.
Yeah.
But the fact is that Apple promotes it as like a standout feature, and it's still a beta version versus Gmail, which was pretty much functional from the get-go. I think Apple really needs to get some more accuracy. I think they really need to open it up to other apps, because the thing is, the coolest thing about Siri at this point is using it to launch other applications, because you can't say my default is a different program, because currently it's a bigger iOS problem than it is just Siri, because it is so locked down.
It needs to work as well for me as does for John Malkovich and Martin Scorsese, basically.
Yes. Or even Zoe Deschanel. Let us fire up the randomizer. Adafruit is debuting a new TV show on the internet called Circuit Playground. Comes with a coloring book and plushies. The first episode, A is for Ampere, just went live. It's a history and explanation of the Ampere and the Electron. And it's awesome. It's Limor Fried showing people, kids, through puppets, all about electronics and circuitry. This is awesome.
I absolutely love this. Anything that explains these concepts in a simple way, and the idea that it's just for kids, I think is silly. Because if it's broken down for a child, there's a good chance that I will understand it. So I'm a big fan of things like this.
No, the circuit breaker isn't a person. It's a device in that box over there. The circuit breaker turns off all the electricity when we draw too much electrical current.
Oh.
And it's also something only a grown-up should touch.
Committed to memory. Wow. Powering all my stuff. Must be so
I think this is better than the Reddit spinoff, Explain It to a 5-Year-Old. Although that's clever. This is actually really useful. Mr.
Andre, it's like Sesame Street for technology.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool. All right, let's thank our other sponsor on today's show, Squarespace.com, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, and now an online store. If you haven't checked this out yet, you got to go do it. You don't need to give them a credit card either to try it out. Squarespace is providing a powerful and flexible e-commerce solution that allows you to instantly create a store, start selling products. Doesn't matter if your products are digital or physical, whether they're actual hardbound books or posters or art, or whether you're selling digital prints, or whether you're selling just MP3 files or some sort of videos. Whatever you got, you can sell it through Squarespace, a single interface for order management, tracking, providing customer updates, printing shipping labels, and adding coupons. The business plan subscription starts at $24 a month when you sign up for a year, or $30 for the monthly plan. They give you the website that is best on any device. Mobile experience is the best on Squarespace. They develop templates with mobile-ready responsive designs, meaning your site automatically restructures to look great no matter whether the person visiting or shopping has a smartphone, a tablet, or computer. They'll be able to do everything you want them to do, and it'll look great. And this means you get a mobile-ready store with the new commerce solution. So you can be all fancy and be like, yeah, I've got mobile e-commerce on the way. Of course, Squarespace, fast and easy to use, exceptionally well-designed, great social media integration. You can automatically import, sync, and publish to and from social media with just a few clicks, dynamically refreshing your site content and raising awareness in your social circles. So Squarespace is an all-in-one platform, integrating all your website needs, domains, design, development, now commerce, hosting, and 24/7 customer support. For a free trial, like I mentioned, go to squarespace.com, sign up for that free account. All you got to give them is an email address. That's just so they can send you the information. No credit card needed. Just try it out. Start building your website. And if you decide to purchase, use the offer code TNT4 and get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. That includes 10% off monthly or annual plans. Don't forget about free domain registration for annual plan customer subscriptions. That's squarespace.com. Use that offer code TNT4, everything you need to create an exceptional website. And we thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. Got a lot of stuff on the calendar. What's going on, Sarah?
Well, we've got a birthday to celebrate. Have you anybody remember? Well, Tom does. Anyone besides Tom remember the Osborne One? On this day in 1981, Adam Osborne unveiled the Osborne One at the West Coast Computer Fair in San Francisco. It had 64K of RAM and a 5-inch monochrome CRT display. It was 24 pounds, but you know what it had? It had a carrying handle on the back, so it's effectively the first portable computer.
Nice.
There's actually one sitting up on top of the bookshelf behind the TNT set there.
It's on the top of the ladder.
Good looking. Good looking. Happy birthday, Osborne One. You don't look a day over 30. The HTC One Pro pre-sales start on AT&T on April 4th for $200. The shipping date is set at April 19th. Apple Q2 2013 earnings conference call has been set for April 23rd. And House of Cards is coming to Blu-ray and DVD on June 11th, according to Amazon. You know I'm a little late in the game here, but I watched my first House of Cards episode last night. So wow, that's good. Yeah, that's a fun show.
It's really good. Stuff.
Yeah. Welcome to the party. let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
Actually, it's about Amazon. Ken from Austin on Amazon buying Goodreads and its other social network, Shelfari.
Hey, TNT crew. Ken from Austin here. I was just listening to discussion of Amazon's acquisition of Goodreads in episode 721, and I was wondering how you'd compare it to Amazon's acquisition of Shelfari. It seems like Shelfari has similar value to the marketplace as that of Goodreads, but it seems to have been kind of buried by Amazon, even though it's still, quote, independent and alive. Thanks. Love the show.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys use any of these sorts. We use Goodreads as our community management for Sword and Laser, the sci-fi fantasy book club. I have looked into Shelfari, and it seemed to me to be more of a like personal library manager with some social aspects. So it kind of overlaps there. But I don't see it as mutually exclusive that Amazon would own both of these and try to make the best of them. I don't know that they have what they have done with Shelfari after purchasing it. Does anybody else?
No, I mean, I think it's about Shelfari and remaining independent. This is something Amazon said they would do with Goodreads, and the idea that they're not taking them apart and putting them into Amazon, like Apple style, it just shows that Amazon has a history of saying, look, we're going to take these properties and we're going to let them develop on their own, and if they become useful, we might take parts of it into Amazon.
What did you make of that whole thing, John?
Well, I was going to say, I thought the Shelfari information is what comprises the data when you use X-ray on a Kindle. So I think that's how they're integrating it into the Amazon ecosystem. I don't know. I feel like, you know, knock on wood, Amazon has a decent record on not gutting companies they take over and letting them be semi-independent. I mean, Tom, you may have said this a few days ago, IMDb is still basically pretty independent. I mean, they definitely funnel you into Amazon to buy video stuff, which is to be expected and fine. But it's not like that went away and just became Amazon Movie Database. Zappos isn't that wholly majority owned by Amazon now, but still basically its own entity. So, you know, hopefully Goodreads use data from it, but don't just kind of bulldoze it into the ground.
We got an email from D. He says, TNT crew, I wanted to give my two cents regarding your story about Game of Thrones being the most pirated show on the internet. I'm here in Japan, and I must tell you, it's hard to get any TV content within a decent time after airing time. For example, Game of Thrones gets on iTunes a year later. Nope, no typo there, a full year. So I basically torrent an HD quality copy, and then a year later I purchase it because in that case, I'd like to own it. Please note that even if I purchase it, it is still illegal as the terms and conditions on the iTunes store restrict the U.S. store to only U.S. territories. On top of that, there are a few shows I'd love to watch once, but never want to own, and I'm not even proposed anything like a rental. I am more than willing to give my money to anyone who would take it, but I have to say nobody seems to want my money. Quite unbelievable when you're talking about the U.S. of A., don't you think? So I think the MPAA, RIAA, and whatnot should stop complaining about piracy and start showing willingness to accept my cold, hard-earned cash. Thanks, D.
That has been the rallying cry of many for many years. And I do think that while they haven't quite given into that argument, they're showing signs. With that HBO comment about, oh, we take it as a compliment, they're showing signs of beginning to embrace that idea of let's change this model that worked well in restricted geography and worked well in old times, and let's make it so that people can give us their money. They have to work it out so they can do that without losing all the money that they already have. It has to be net profit positive for them, or they won't do it. That's the problem for us as consumers. Well, John Falcone, thank you so much for joining us today. What are you guys working on over there at CNET these days?
All the new stuff that's coming out. We just, if you can believe it, posted our first TV review of 2013. So they're all hitting now. You'll see more of them in April. But, you know, just plowing through the latest and greatest of everything.
Check it out, CNET.com. And, of course, you can follow John at FalconeJP on Twitter. That's FalconeJP on Twitter. Thanks again, man.
Thank you.
And you can submit stories in our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. Vote things up or down. Join the folks in there, letting us know each and every day these are the stories we're interested in. Helps us put together our lineup, figure out what to talk about. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us. Our email address is tnt@twit.tv. And give us a call. Leave us a voicemail like we had from Austin today. 260-TNT-SHOW is the phone number. Or you can attach it as an MP3 and send it to our email address, tnt@twit.tv. We'll be back tomorrow with Tim Stevens from Engadget. See you then.